हरिः ॐ। प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
The words in absence of anyone, any of these, indicate that there are a number of ashrayas, each dependent on one another. Thus, for example, without a visible object, the sense whose existence is inferred by its perception of that object is not manifest. Like we say we can see because there's something to be seen, right? If there's nothing to see, you can't perceive that you can see, right? We're not talking about the eye. We're talking about the sense to be able to use it, right? Nor is the seer, right? Means, and then you can't say, I'm seeing things, right? You know, because you aren't the seer, and the sense is not operating because there's nothing to see, right? In other words, he's pointing out that dependency is there, because the Lord is independent, right? And without the sense and the seer, there is no presiding deity, such as the sun god, to be known by inference from the activity of the sense. If that's not functioning, then there's nothing for the demigod to do. Moreover, without the presiding deity, the sense does not function. And without the functioning of that sense, nothing becomes an object of sight. Right? Something can't be seen if there's not something to see it with, or someone in control of the sense that it operates so it can see. In this way, quote, in the absence of any of these, we do not perceive the others. Right? But in that situation of mutual dependence, he who sees all three by direct visual perception, who knows them as their constant witness, is the supersoul, their ashraya. It is understood that each of the three is the ashraya of the others, and so to distinguish the supersoul, he is qualified as the ashraya who is his own ashraya, who has no other ashraya. He is also the ashraya of all others. Footnote 27. Srila Prabhupada clarifies the relationship between the dependent and independent ashrayas. Without our having eyes, the sunlight is useless. And without sunlight, the eyes are useless. Thus they are interdependent. And none of them is independent. Therefore the natural question arises concerning who made them interdependent. The one who has made such a relationship of interdependence must be ultimately completely independent. As stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate source of all interdependent objectives is the completely independent subject, Surat. Right, so here in this case, then he'll be the subject. Right? Everything else is the object. Sometimes you take him as the object. In other words, where your attentions lie, he's the object. Right? But when you're dealing with subject and object, then he's the subject. Because he's the one that is operating. He's the one that is independent. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you'll see, sometimes he's called the object, sometimes the subject, but they're different contexts. Mm-hmm. The ultimate source of all interdependence is the supreme truth of Paramatma, the Supersoul, who is not dependent on anything else. He is Sva-Shraya Shraya. He is only dependent on himself, and thus he is the supreme shelter of everything. Sva-Shraya Shraya. Interesting name for something. I mean, I'm going to just call it Sva. SSS. The individual is under the clutches of illusory energy, and therefore, although qualitatively one with the Supersoul, he is under the illusion of identifying himself with matter. And to get out of this illusory conception of factual life, the individual soul has to depend on the Supersoul to be recognized as one with him. In that sense, also, the Supersoul is the supreme shelter, and there is no doubt about it. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.9.4. So he's the one that creates the interdependence. He is the shelter for all that which is interdependent. And he himself has no other shelter. He's the shelter for himself. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we got to this because we're trying to establish what ashraya means in the Bhagavatam sense. It doesn't mean that just he's the shelter, your prayers, you surrender to him, that devotion, that aspect is there. But the point is everything else other than him is dependent upon him. Right? And then of dependence, that supreme is that devotion. Because it already pointed out, he maintains everything. Right? He creates it, he maintains it, he destroys it. But the devotees, because of their devotion, then there's that extra element of nourishment. That potion. Undoubtedly, okay. The ashraya is called Atma to acknowledge the partial non-difference of the pure jiva and supersoul as part and whole. Right. Undoubtedly, the pure jiva, who is called the witness, is an ashraya. This we know from statements such as these. Although transcendental, he considers himself a material product, Srimad Bhagavatam 175. Wakeful awareness, dreaming, and deep sleep, all caused by the modes of material nature, are functions of the mind. The individual soul has been ascertained to be distinct from these functions, for he is their witness. Right? So now, he is now the ashraya of these things lower than him. Right? But the point is then that will all go back to the Lord. And the pure one witness, the actions of the impure agent, the pure one witnesses the actions of the impure agent, the mind, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.11.12. An alternative proposal concerning who is the ashraya is that the three persons, Adhyatmika and so on, are all ashrayas. Yes, this is true. But because the three are mutual ashrayas of one another, none of them is the exclusive ashraya. These three are not what is denoted by the primary meaning of the word ashraya, indicated in the verse beginning, in the absence of any one of these. 660.3. But then let the witnessing self be the ashraya. This proposal is responded to in the words, he who knows all three is the supreme soul, independent of all else. He is his own support and the true ashraya. The witnessing self is the jiva, but the supersoul, who, as his own ashraya, has no other ashraya, is the ashraya of the jiva. Such is the difference between the jiva and the supersoul, as stated in the Hamsa Guhya prayer. A person may know everything about the modes of nature, but still not know the all-knowing, unlimited Lord whom I worship, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.25. Okay, 6.4.25. Okay. Okay, this is verse. Because they are only matter, the body, the life airs, the external and internal senses, the five gross elements, and the subtle sense objects, form, taste, smell, sound, and touch, cannot know their own nature, the nature of the other senses, or the nature of their controllers. But the living being, because of his spiritual nature, can know his body, the life airs, the senses, the elements, and the sense objects. And he can also know the three qualities that form their roots. Nonetheless, although the living being is completely aware of them, he is unable to see the Supreme Being, who is omniscient and unlimited. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto him. 6.4.25. Therefore, the only true ashraya is the Supersoul, who is described in the verse beginning, Abhashas Cha, the Supreme One, who is celebrated as the Supreme Being, or the Supreme Soul, is the supreme source of the cosmic manifestation, as well as its reservoir and winding up. The verse under discussion, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.9, was spoken by Sri Sukadev. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan gives the following explanation. Because the three, sense deity, and gross organ, perform their functions with mutual dependence, they cannot be the shelter of each other, right? Because the sense is the subtle. The sense organ will be what is doing it. You know, the nose, the eye, the skin. He who knows, they cannot be the shelter of each other. That is explained. He who knows the three, sense, deity, and gross organ, is the shelter. Since the pure jiva is called witness of the senses and body, it functions independently. Why do you not say the jiva is the shelter of these three? The jiva is an amsa, and Paramatma is the amshi. Both are accepted as the shelter. Not satisfied, another meaning is given. Let the jiva be the shelter. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.25, Puman means the jiva. The jiva knows all these and the gunas. Sarvam Puman Veda Gunams Chatejaha. The Lord is the supreme substratum or shelter for himself as well as others. This is the import of Sukadeva Goswami's statements, explaining the various topics defined in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami will now draw the same conclusion from a slightly different angle while explaining the characteristics of a Mahapurana. 3.3.3c. Sukadeva Goswami lists the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam and confirms that the absolute truth is Krishna, the ultimate shelter. Verses 1 to 63, yes.
So who's the shelter?
Means the jiva is the shelter of the sense object, and the, what was the,
deity.
And the deity.
The sense deity.
It's because he can see them all. Because when we're talking about the sense deity, right, let's say, as the example is given of the sun, then the sun god is he's not technically the jiva, right? He's the material, the physical manifestation of the combination of modes that therefore jiva's in and has that position. Right? So in other words, the adibhautaka. So, and the body and the sense, those are also then adibhautaka. Right? So then, because they're of the 24 elements, right? So then the jiva is able to witness or see these three and the modes that make them work. So in that way you could say he's the shelter. Because if he wasn't involved, they wouldn't be there on that level. But he is, that's only in the pure state that he actually sees. So they're talking about all this, but then it's just the pure soul. But the real point is that the Lord is the source of all these, because the 24 elements are his energy. So they're maintained by him, not by the jiva. So then the jiva ultimately is not really the shelter. You know, does that make sense? So, but you can say he is a shelter, just like you can say the jiva is Purusha, or an enjoyer, or a controller. He is in his limited way, but he's not ultimately. So that's the point that's being brought out. Because just in case someone is saying, no, but he is a shelter. Yes, he is, but he's not the ultimate shelter. So what Sukadeva Goswami is talking about when he says ashraya as a topic, he means the Lord, not the jiva. Right? Because others, if you were following other philosophies, they would take it as the jiva. You know, they don't have anything beyond. You know? So your atheistic philosophies would take it that way. Summary of text 61. Previously it was shown that Sukadeva Goswami and Srila Vyasadeva had the same conviction about what is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Here Srila Jiva Goswami again substantiates that idea by quoting the statements of Sukadeva Goswami regarding the characteristics of the Mahapurana. Because the idea is Jiva Goswami wants a study of the Bhagavatam to go on without any side problems. So therefore, that's why he's basically going through the philosophy, not going like A, B, C, D. He's going A, B, B, C, C, D. He's making the exact connections and then moving to the next one. And then when you see those and that's established, then he brings in the next, connects it to this, then moves forward into it. Because he's leaving no gaps. That's what we were saying before. As these scholars in these other sampradayas, they read Jiva Goswami's works just because of this. They say there is no scholar. So when we say he's the, you know, greatest scholar, like that, it's not just us who says that. We're not just saying that because he's in our line. You know, it's just like, you know, my mom's the best cook in the world. But, you know, like that. You know, it's good. But the others are saying it also. You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, so that's what's going on. So even though it seems that it's a bit difficult going through, but then there's no doubts left. You know exactly what each thing means. It's very clear, and so there is no Mayavad, no Buddhism, no anything else other than pure devotion. Although the 10 categories of Sri Sutta gave seem to differ from those of Sukadeva Goswami, Sri Jiva shows that in essence they are the same. Text 61. By describing in another way the defining characteristics by which Srimad Bhagavatam is implied to be the greatest of Puranas, the following two verses also indicate that the Supersoul alone is the Ashraya. O Brahmana, authorities on the matter understand a Purana to contain 10 characteristic topics. The creation of the universe. So this is, who's speaking?
Sutta.
Okay. The creation of the universe, the subsequent creation of worlds and beings, the maintenance of all living beings, their sustenance, the periods, the dynasties of great kings, the activities of such kings, annihilation, motivation, and supreme shelter. Other scholars state that the great Puranas deal with these 10 topics, whereas lesser Puranas may deal with 5. So that's the, yeah. Here, periods, antarani, means reigns of manus, manvantaras. It should be noted that the terminology used in Sutta Goswami's list of 10 differs slightly from that given in the second canto by Sukadeva. But they, yeah, to the point be pointed out, they mean the same thing.
Well, why would they do that?
It's just because words means you can say your concepts to be explained, or how you say a particular concept to be expressed through communication in language has many synonyms. Does that make sense? Like here he says motivation. Okay, where was that? Motivation, and the other uses impetus for activity. So what is the impetus for activity? That's your motivation. You understand? So it's just, there's synonyms. Because in Sanskrit, it has a wide range of synonyms. Like, you know, one word might have 10, 12 different synonyms.
I was wondering, because he might know that it can create some kind of controversy.
No, but see, because you're also dealing and you're speaking, so it also must be, one is you see the audience, two you see it must be pleasant, so there's always the, you know, change and that, because if you always use the same word all the time, unless it's to bring out something, but the 10 topics, generally speaking, wouldn't be a problem. You know what I'm saying? You know, Mayavadis, academics, these guys make it into a problem, but amongst the Vaishnava community, it wouldn't be. You know, and even if you did use the same word, they would find some fault anyway. You know, that's what they do. You know.
Maharaj, with the synonyms, would each word be more applicable to the situation?
Yes, you could say. But it also brings out a different aspect. You know, just like Prabhupada uses, like we came across this morning, he uses shelter instead of sleep. Right? So then, because then you can take sleep is ignorance, and so then everything connected with that. So sleep, then what you sleep with the body, that you sleep with everything connected with the body,
the bathroom that the body has a bath in, you know, the closet where the clothes go that go on the body, that, you know, it just keeps going, you know. So all that all goes together, you know. So then it's just, what it does is it brings out a greater understanding. That's what it's supposed to do. Because as you go through, and Prabhupada's explaining in the purports, there's generally a similar discussion or explanation, but occasionally he does something quite seemingly different, but it's just taking another view, so that's vichar. And by that, it broadens your appreciation of it. Does that make sense? You know, because sometimes, let's say, we read something, and then from reading it, you know, we contemplate it and we get an understanding, but we'll put it into our own words. And so we'll understand it that way, we'll explain it that way, and we're going on like that for sometimes a long time. Then we may come across that original definition again, and then we'll see by the words Prabhupada used, which may have been different from ours, brings out more than what we caught the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, and so then it expands the, you know what I'm saying, like that.
It paints like a more precise picture.
Yes, because Krishna's unlimited, so all these aspects are unlimited, but there's a certain amount that we have misgivings about. You know, it's not like everything, you know. Like, is anybody complaining, why are beetles, you know, black? You know, or why do they, you know, squeak or buzz, you know? Why can't they sing? You know, so, well, actually, they do sing. Some of them do sing. But you know what I'm saying, or like that, or so no one worries about those things. But there is reasons why it's like that. You know what I'm saying. So they don't get into that. What he gets into are things that have come up, right? Because Bhagavatam has been out by this time, basically, you know, 4,500 years, and so people have made complaints. So he addresses those. Like that. Is that? Okay, so the periods means, because you're talking about here, we can see the periods, the dynasties of great kings and the activities of such kings. So then the periods, because if you know the subjects, then you know that must be the Manvantars. Because the Manvantars are just, not only just the Manu, but they're significant because a Manvantar then is when all the demigods change. All the, you know, principal who are managers of the universe. In other words, all these ones who are the lord of the senses. Mm-hmm. All of them change at the same time. But it's significant for us because Manu deals with us, so then, you know, it's connected from there. Is that? Yeah. It should be noted that the okay. Uti, the impetus for activity, and mukti, liberation, are replaced by hetu, motivation, and vamsanucharna, activities of great kings. In Bhavarta Deepika, while commenting on verse 12.7.9 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami offers the following reconciliation between the 10 topics. Okay. Yeah, because it says you have dynasties of great kings, so that's one of the five main ones. But activities of such kings. But the point is what they do is how you'll get liberated. So that's the practical. Manu also does that. If you remember, it gave the 10 topics that you 10 qualities required to be able to practice Varnashram. But then later he said this is the essence of the whole Varnashram system. But then later, further in the work, he gives 5. And he's saying that these are the essence. But if you compare them, you'll see that by those 5 that he gives is just 5, then you get the 10. You know, just like by giving up, daydreaming, then you can get rid of greed. You know what I'm saying? So many times it does like that. Okay, so this is Sridhar Swami. So we see Sukadeva Goswami. Then this is 2.10.1 and 12.7.9 and 10. So Sarga, primary creation, is the same. Visarga, secondary, is the same. Stana, maintenance, vritti, he gives. Poshana, sustenance, raksha. Raksha means to protect. Poshana means to sustenance, but that's the whole point, is that it's special for the devotees. Right.
Then uti and hetu means your reasons or your motives, like that. Amanmantar, vamsha, ishanu kata, activities of the Lord and his devotees, vamsanu charitam. Niroda, annihilation, samsta, mukti, liberation, samsta, and ashraya, the simple shelter, apashraya. Some authorities give the fivefold definition this way. Sargascha prati sargascha, vamso manvantarani cha. Vamsanu charitam cheti puranam pancha lakshanam. This is in... Okay, it's coming from Machi Purana. It's quoted in another. The five defining characteristics of a Purana are creation, annihilation, the history of dynasties, the reigns of Manus, and the activities of members of the dynasties. Machi Purana, 5365. This difference of opinion derives from the distinction between a Mahapurana and the lesser Puranas, the former being more important than the latter. Thus, in different contexts, it is fitting to define a Purana differently. Because, one, you can define it differently because you have a major and a minor Purana. So then it can have a different way that it's put together. Right, just like you have something that's more, trying to find an example.
More concise and more general?
More concise, more general, but no, not even that. It's more like you have more features. You know, just like if you have not an expensive car, you know, it gets around and it does the job. And then you have more expensive ones, they have things that the other one wouldn't even dream of having. It's not just they have, you know, better tires or better this or better that. They have things that aren't even in the other one. So that's the yes.
Those distinctions, can we say, for example, that Chidam Charitamrita and TLC? Would it be the example? Like TLC is the concise version?
And no, not exactly. Because in TLC, you're getting the summary of the whole thing. So in the lesser Puranas, they have all the stories, but you're not getting into so much detail as to the Lord's position. You know what I'm saying? It could, but it will classify them within these things. So, in other words, the 10 would go back into these 5 there. But to make sure that it's fully understood, which is the actual point of the Purana, to understand the Lord. Therefore, the Mahapurana does that very nicely. Right? Does that make sense?
But do we have only one Mahapurana?
No. There's others. There's others. There's others. You just like, let's say... in the Mahabharata, then when it talks about the churning of the milk ocean, then it mentions that when it was worked out and then they approached Vasuki to churn, he agreed, and so then Garuda went, picked up the mountain, brought the mountain, placed it on the back of Kurma, and then the Vasuki went around, the demigods and the demons got together, they started churning. Okay? So the story is in no way incomplete. Right? You got all the detail. But that dependence upon the Lord that the Mahapurana brings out, that the demigods tried to bring it, then they couldn't. It collapsed on them. So the Lord had to both, you know, revive them and get Garuda to carry the mountain. Then they put the mountain in the ocean, but then it sank. Because what's its basis? They're going to do a yajna. What's the basis of this yajna? So using material elements on material elements. So it's not going to work. So the Lord has to be there as the support of anything. Right? And then even that, he's supporting that, but then in the application... then it wobbles, so he has to sit on top to create the balance. So in other words, the application of your sacrifice, also you have to be thinking of the Lord and everything. Not just, you're satisfied, you know, it's for the Lord, now let's just get into this sacrifice. You understand? So that's what will come out in the other one. So that's the, these aspects that come out.
Is that?
Okay. Although the Vishnu Purana and some other Puranas also include all 10 topics, these Puranas are lesser because they give prominence only to the 5 main topics, 29. The following chart depicts how the 10 topics relate to the 5. Oh, okay, that's on the bottom. Okay, Sarga, so you have Sarga, Visarga, and Ashraya. Because in the Sarga, that's the Lord's creation, so that means everything's coming from Him. Pratisarga, Nirodha and Mukti, Vamsi, Ishanukata, Manvantara, Manvantara Stanam, and Vamsanucharitam, Ishanukata, Poshana, Bhuti, and Ashraya. And this is coming from?
Also Sridhar Swami.
Sridhar Swami. Okay. Does it continue with that, or just, okay. Yeah, you should mention that.
Sure.
Just so we know. Because then, see, because what you have to know is if something looks different than what you'd expect, then the question comes up, who did it? If Sridhar Swami did it, you adjust how you're looking at it. You know, if we just put it together, then you can see, oh, okay, because this maybe could go, you know what I'm saying? So it's always good to
do that.
So who did it?
Sridhar Swami. Just so that we can. Right, in other words, Ishanu Kata means, in Vamsa will be they're using Vamsanucharana as the
activities of the kings.
Activities of the kings, okay. Manvantaras will be Vamsa, okay. Is that the Manvantaras, but we see that they're always connected with the Lord, so they'll all be in the pastimes of the Lord.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that. So they get taken care of there. And in the Sarga you'll give the creation, secondary creation, the Lord as the shelter of all that. And Pratisarga in the secondary they'll focus on the Nirodha and the Mukti, means the how it winds up. That's why sometimes it's called, it focuses on destructions rather than create secondary creation. Because the point is here, this Pratisarga in the 5 topics will just describe Brahma's creating it that first time. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It won't discuss how, it'll mention how in every day of Brahma, there'll be the destruction, or in the when the manus change, or all these different things. But it doesn't focus on that as much. While in the 10 topics, then Nirodha and Mukti, they'll be covered there. Okay? So the Nirodha is that to have a recreation. So that means the first creation when Brahma does it, I mean not the primary creation, but the first time, that is the secondary. But then it will get destroyed, you'll have to do it again. So the secondary creation is done many, many, thousands. There's I think, probably gives the number, there's something like 500,000, 400 or something like that, manus in a lifetime of Brahma. So that means there'll be that many of that destruction and recreation. Right? And then there's the ones at the end of his day, just like that. So there'll be, that'll be 14 less than that, but then there'll be the ones where the end of every cycle of the Mahayugas, there's partial ones, small ones. So then that one's, that will be, there's 1,000 of them in a day. So it's kind of like, he's got a lot to do. Is that what I'm saying? So therefore this will be brought out as its own topic, but this will just be included in the minor Purana. And then when you give Vamsanucharitam, how the kings come down, then that'll be the key, because they're all connected with the Lord, but you're showing the protection that the Lord's giving them. You're showing how people have motivation, what they're doing, like that, and how he's the ultimate shelter. Does that make sense? So they're covered in there, but they're not brought out, so you don't necessarily notice them as well. So that's the advantage of the Mahapurana, is that they become more distinct. Does that make sense? Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami is here stressing that even among all the Puranas, both major and minor, none discuss all 10 topics as thoroughly as Srimad Bhagavatam. Every Purana describes the avatars of the personality of Godhead to some extent, but many Puranas talk about only one or a few, perhaps about several, but only briefly. In contrast, Srimad Bhagavatam dedicates at least one chapter each to the glories of more than 30 avatars of the Supreme Lord, and dedicates the entire 90 chapters of the 10th canto, plus several chapters of the 1st and 11th, to the pastimes of Sri Krishna. In contrast, the Krishna Lila in the 5th division of the Vishnu Purana fills only 38 chapters. Right? Well, we have 90.
More than 90.
Srila Jiva thus concludes that Srimad Bhagavatam alone fully deserves the title Mahapurana. That means, in other words, it's the Mahapurana of Mahapuranas. It means that there others deal with the topic, so you can call it technically, but it's actually the full Mahapurana.
Who accepts that?
We're really not worried about it. It's just for our own information, but that's just the way it is. You know, there's some things that you don't worry about because, no one else is going to worry about it. They all accept Bhagavatam as, but it's not their major Purana. Like Vishnu Purana is the major Purana for the Shris because it's about Vishnu, primarily. So that's why they'll think that. The Madhvas, then they Bhagavatam's important to them, you know. Then just one or two chapters, a little bit, you know. They're not very pleased with these ones. So 61.3. The Bhagavatam in its 12 cantos does not intend to set forth the 10 topics separately, canto by canto. Nor should we suppose that these topics mentioned in the second canto are included in sequence in the cantos beginning with the third. Apart from the last few topics, starting with annihilation in the 10th canto and later, and a topic concerning reigns of Manus in the 8th, the topics defined cannot be assigned to certain cantos. That's important. May have elements there, but it's not that it's written to go there. It's something that we like to do. You notice that means throughout history you have had these varying kinds of presentations. And these really great masters in their area, they use these very unique ways to categorize things, because there's always the problem, where do you put something? Right? Because it's in this and it's in that. So they have these systems that categorize everything perfectly. But you have to be more, you have to appreciate it more to be able to use it. Then you'll always have somebody coming along later and taking all that, recompiling it, so that it fits nicely into all the little topics and boxes and the chronological order and all that. Which then, in one way, makes it easier. Just like Patanjali did his grammar. And some will say that it's hard to understand, but the Astadhyayi. It's the Kaumudi? Siddhanta Kaumudi. That's what's then done by those later in the line that reconstruct the whole thing, and then they'll say this makes it more easy. But those who actually understand the Sanskrit grammar in its full context will say that the original is easier to understand. Right? Like the Mahabharata. We know that there's 18, what do they call them? Parvas, right? Now there's within that, the 18 parvas, they're divided up because there's major areas within it into again parvas. So there's 100 parvas. So these 100 parvas then comprise all the, how do you say, 18 parvas, right? And then within each parva, you know, then you have chapters. Right? So as it's going through, it's referring to the 100 parvas, not as much. It only refers to the major parva at the beginning and end of it.
But the subsequent parvas, the 100 parvas, every chapter will be explaining which parva it's in. Right? Because those parvas, let's say it's about Draupadi Swayambar. So everything connected with that will all be referenced to. And then all that's within, yes, the Adi Parva. Of course, exactly. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the kind of things that they do. Or in Arthashastra, you have books. These, I think he has 15 books. Each book has these subsections. But then within it, they have topics. And the topics can overlap chapters. Because that's the point, is that you're discussing one thing, then it fits into one category, but it also fits into the other. So the subject goes between them. But at the same time is then that particular area. Let's say responsibility. Okay? So it's a topic, but then you have responsibility in, say, your car. You know, you have responsibility in taking care of your lawn. You have responsibility for your children. Now you could say responsibility is the main thing, and then you get into, you know, your car, your children, like that, nice. But then when do you discuss about taking care of your car and other things like that? That's not responsibility in the way of how you drive. How do you maintain? In other words, the chapter's about the car, but because it overlaps with these other things, then part of it's on responsibility of the car, and then the other part of it's in the next chapter. Does that make sense? So if you catch how it works, it's a super excellent system, but it's very sophisticated. So these Vedic literatures, at least the original one, they tend to work in this way. Right? So all these things are there, and they're put together in a way so that it unfolds very nicely. In other words, all these 10 topics are going to be there, but they're going to unfold as Pariksit Maharaj ask questions. And then the discussion of that is going to unfold as Shaunaka Rishi asks questions. Right? So you're going to get all that. And then within it, we have then they're discussing a conversation where that's working on questions that is opening according to that. Does that make sense? So in that, you're going to get all these overlaps. So because they'll be talking about a Manu, and then something happens, and then they wonder, well, what's the background of that? Right? Isn't that? You know. So we hear about Vritrasura before we hear about who Vritrasura was in his previous life. You know? Does that make sense? Like Bharat Maharaj, you hear about Bharat Maharaj, then you hear about the deer, then you hear about Jarabharat. But this was the other way around. Because it came up in that particular way. Because you see here how this person, though a demon, he had full faith in the Lord. Right? And then Indra, who's supposed to be the head of the demigods, didn't have that faith in the Lord. Right? You know, and the demon is selfless, but Indra is selfish. Right? Because Dadichi, I can't remember, I just heard it the other day, but I can't remember what was the request. Dadichi had requested something from Indra, and he wouldn't give it. And it wasn't a big thing. It wasn't actually that major. Then, when the thunderbolt's to be made, it's to be made from Dadichi's bones. So Indra has to go to Dadichi. He wouldn't give him this simple request, but Dadichi has to give him his bones of his body. That means he has to leave his body. So right there, already Indra is starting to feel bad. You know, that he's just too materialistic, too caught up. You know what I'm saying? So these kind of things will, how to bring those out, those will come up all around. So everything is about pure devotion. That's the main point. So that's why the opening is there, to just establish that that's all there's about. But then it will come up in all these different aspects. Does that make sense? Yes.
You see that Prabhupada didn't give names to cantas, though we don't remember referring to them so much.
But that's not, it's not necessarily the aspect of that the canto is that.
I'm always wondering why it's called like that.
It's a underlying, let's say, theme that could be there. You know, because if you can see it in that perspective, then it will give you more understanding. You know, though it may not appear externally or just at first glance that that's what it's about. You know, but by seeing in that perspective, it will broaden your understanding.
Apart from the last few topics, starting with annihilation in the 10th canto and later, a topic concerning reigns of Manu in the 8th, the topics defined cannot be assigned to certain cantos. 6.61.4. Sri Sridhar Swami makes the same point. Quote, to increase the transcendental fame of Lord Krishna, the 10th canto describes how the wicked rulers of earth were put to an end, brought on by the general decline of religious principles. Previous cantos describe four kinds of annihilation, the destruction of the material elements, and so on. Bhavartika Deepika 10.1.1. Right, because we mentioned it means we have the one at the end of the cycle of the yuga. Mm-hmm. Then you have at the end of the cycle of the yuga, the manvantar, the end of that Brahma's day, and then the end of Brahma's life. Like that. Okay. Thus, Sridhar Swami says that the 10th canto mainly talks about the ashraya in the form of Sri Krishna. In Sridhar Swami's own words, quote, the 10th canto explains the 10th topic, the personal embodiment of the ashraya principle, who protects those who take shelter of him. Bhavarta Deepika 10.1.1. We can discover similar statements elsewhere. Sridhar Swami, so you may have an area where it just happens to take up a canto, but it's not that it's designed that the whole thing's like that. So it's artificial to try to do that. Right? And he'd bring it up because people do try to do it. Right? Because the idea is to analyze and make it very clear and put everything nicely. So this idea of putting everything in boxes, it's not a new thing. It's just now it's a predominant thing. But it's always been there.
Right?
Sorry?
Watermelons? Good in boxes.
Oh, yes. Square tomatoes also. Yes.
Yes. People don't have enough vision to accommodate the whole thing together, so they need actually to put on boxes, otherwise they can...
Yes, but the problem is once they put it in boxes, they get basically, you could say, an intellectual understanding, but to apply it, then it doesn't work like that.
Because they have to take it out.
They have to take it out of the boxes, so you have to get there anyway. So by a first step, you can maybe do it, but you have to make sure that your step of putting them in boxes doesn't jeopardize something else later. That's the weakness of it. Because then the personal, sometimes they can't catch. You know, they just think, no, it's got to be this way. And so how to get it across that it doesn't belong that way. So then it's just a matter of, by association, then you start to catch. So you make it as clear as possible, simple as possible. But beyond that, then it's just association, then it will be appreciated. Because it's the Lord reveals himself, since he is.
That overlapping system that you mentioned earlier would make sense, because you need something like that if you're going to memorize everything.
Yes.
It would make sense.
Yeah, because then they have these breakdowns where they show them all and as an outline how they all fit together. Yeah. And then generally speaking, there's shlokas on that. So if you memorize those shlokas, then you know the whole topic. Okay. Once you've studied it, so you're aware, but then by repeating the shloka, then you remember where everything is. So generally most technical works always have a shloka that defines, you know, everything or everything in that section. Like that. And I've generally seen translators always remove it. Right? Because what's going to be told later, why it's no, but it gives you, so you can see the whole thing. Right? Because there is the point of you read it, then you study it. So when you read it, it doesn't have much significance. But when you study it, it does. So that's they're writing for both. You know, moderns generally writing for reading. I don't know that there is the concept of study.
You know, 20 books in one term, 3 month term, you can't call study. You know. Skim, maybe. Like one student would get top marks, would say they learned, they developed their own system, they'd read every third word. Like that. They wouldn't read, they just got, and then you'd catch, you know, like that. And then you get the, is that what Cliff does? He just drops out every third word and then kind of edits it. Yeah, like that. So, yeah. Okay, we can discover similar statements elsewhere. 61.5. Sri Goswami's opinion, therefore, is that, for the most part, every canto tells of each topic as either a minor or a major theme. Right? So then, each canto is talking about all of them, so then what's maybe a major theme is what Prabhupada will talk about. Then he'll give the canto that name. Right. He establishes this by saying, quote, the great sages explain the topics, both by direct statement and by implication. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.2. Because in all cantos, both direct and indirect descriptions can be found. This means that the first and second cantos also contribute to the Bhagavatam's being a Mahapurana. Because some people will try to say is that they're not, because this is, you know, one is before the even conversation took place. And the other is just, you know, you're just giving that kind of background and everything. So then they don't catch how actually, no, they're doing the same thing. Because like in Purushasukta confirmed, the Veda itself expands from the Purushasukta. Mm-hmm. Means you have the Brahma Gayatri. The Brahma Gayatri expands into the Purushasukta. The Purushasukta expands into the Veda. So that means then the Gayatri expands into four different kinds of Purushasukta. And so each of those makes one of the four Vedas. So when you say Purushasukta confirmed, and that shows its position with connection with the Lord, because it's primary creation. Mm-hmm. So the second canto, you're dealing with that there. You know, and then behind with so many other elements. Does that make sense? So some people try to... So here is that people will try to take each canto and say it's one topic, and that's all. Or they'll try to say that the topics start from the third canto. Right, and then that the first two don't. You know, there's all kinds of. Therefore, we do not accept that the topics appear in a strict sequential order. The chart on the following page illustrates the corresponding Sarva Samvadini verse describing where each of the 10 topics is featured in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sarva Samvadini, that's his commentary, Jiva Goswami's commentary. So the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, and then primarily discussed in cantos. That's primarily, but they're also secondarily inferred everywhere. Because if you're dealing with how the Lord, you know, the Lord, he's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer, then you've already discussed, you know, basically there so many topics. Right? Because then if you say maintain, that's how they get the Manvantara thing, is that how does he maintain? He maintains human society through the Manu. Right? And so, you know, like this. Okay. Sarga, primary creation, is second and third cantos. Visarga, secondary creation, second, third, and fourth, is when they give that breakdown of how all the elements work and Brahma makes all the different choices. Vritti, from kama, occupation motivated by personal desire, in third. Vritti, according to Vidhi, occupation in compliance with Vedic injunctions, 7 and 11. Varaksha, protection, 1 through 12. Yes, it's described primarily in all, you know, right? Because the protection means how he's nourishing the devotees, so that's the whole thing. It's his special interaction. That special mercy the Lord gives the devotees, that's the raksha. So we see those in all the stories. Right. Manvantara, reigns of Manus, in 8. Vamsha and Vamshanucharitam, dynasty and activities of dynasty, 4 and 9. Like the ninth canto just ends just with this long line of dynasties until it gets to Krishna and Balaram. Then it goes into the tenth canto. Samsta, disillusion, 11 and 12. Hetu, motivation, 3rd and 11th. But interesting, 3rd and 11th, that's Kapila Gita and Uddhava Gita.
Yes.
So in other words, motivation, you know, that's you know, how people are working with the modes, how they're doing all those things. And Apashraya, the supreme shelter, 10. In his commentary to this verse, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan redresses the antagonistic view that the first two cantos are not part of the original Bhagavatam, an argument put forward on the supposed grounds that each of the 10 topics has to directly correspond to a single canto. So, you know, somebody came up with this, and then, you know, that's their, you know, their glory, so they have to try to fight it. You know, that's the main difficulty.
This description of fifth and the sixth canto in there.
It says primarily discussed. That means you have so many things in there. Just like the fifth canto, we have all these different things where all the planetary systems are in that, but at the same time you're having Jarabhara. So and then you have all the I think the Kanaras, Kimpurushas offering their prayers. So you have a lot of things happening there. So then I guess it's not any primary, it doesn't take up a major aspect of the canto. In other words, all, you know, there must be whatever the topics are there.
Just mentioned in Raksha, 1 to 12 Raksha includes 5.
Yeah, okay,
six,
so then 5. See, yeah, it's got to be kind of mentioned.
Next time I'll print it out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Circle 5.
Yeah,
then you put a little note. Even though 5 didn't play anywhere else, it does apply here. Because 1 through 12 implies that 5 is there. But if you need pratyaksha, then see the footnote. 1, 2, 3. You're going to have fun. Yeah. It's good. Okay. So this is Baladeva Vidyabhushan here. The 10 topics of Bhagavatam. Yeah. The 10 topics of Bhagavatam are described in another way, with different names and different meanings to some degrees. Some foolish people associate these 10 topics of the Puranas sequentially with the canto starting with the 3rd canto. The author refutes this view. This disturbs the nature of the Bhagavatam with 12 cantos and 18,000 verses, since it admits 2 cantos. Because then how can you call it that it has 12 cantos and 18,000 verses? Because you'd get quite a lot with the loss. It would not be the complete Bhagavatam. If one claims that Sukadeva spoke only 10 cantos, the first and 12th would not have any value. The 18,000 verses were studied by Sukadeva from his father and recited by him. That is a fact. The information is eternally accomplished. That is also a fact. So, it is a bona fide presentation. Yes, means just saying, it's a fact. Deal with it. Yes.
We said that previously, that Vyasadeva gave Sukadeva Goswami the principle.
That was when he was in the womb.
And then he gave him 18,000, and he also gave 18,000 to Purushottama, same? More or less.
Basically, but you only have 7 days.
Okay.
You know, because they were not eating or sleeping or drinking. Mm-hmm. When we talk 7 days, we don't mean, you know, comfortably in the morning, get up, have your tea, and, you know, then come and sit down, and then break for breakfast, and then, you know, go break for lunch, have a little siesta, then come and eat. You know, like generally, you know, people would go. We're just talking 24/7, you know, and literally 7. So, you know, how it works out. The point is that these are the verses of the Bhagavatam. Now, how Vyasadeva puts them together, you know, the context that he uses and all that, then that's his, you know, maturity and his authorship. You know, so then all these have been discussed, but, you know, it may be how the story goes, or he wants to bring it out, how Sutta spoke it rather than how Sukadeva was discussing it, or where he's speaking it to Sukadeva, so that could be already what Sutta has spoken, but most likely not, because he'll have to discuss before. But at the same time, is that point would have come from somewhere, because remember, there's 1 billion verses within Purana. So then, therefore, then, you know, it has some angle that it's starting from. Does that make sense? You know, so you can either open with Urvasi speaking, or with the king, you know, Puruvava speaking, and then Urvasi says something. You know what I'm saying? You know, the conversation is a huge conversation. We only take the essential points, so you can always move them here and there. The main point here is that, as Jiva Goswami has asserted right from the beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam revolves around Sri Krishna, the supreme shelter for all existence. The Bhagavatam speaks about the ashraya in the beginning, the middle, and the end, and not just in the 12th canto, as these foolish critics would have us believe. A more detailed explanation of this is found in Sri Krishna Sandarbha. In the next section, Jiva Goswami gives the definition of the first 7 of the 10 items as listed by Suta Goswami in the 12th canto. Yes.
I forgot to mention the reason why Baladevi Jabhushana mentions the first and the 12th are dropped off is because Shukadeva Goswami didn't speak those 2 cantos. He only spoke from 2nd to
12th. Yes, yes. I mean, it's even, I think he spoke half of, or part of, 12th. But in the 12th, he finishes and then gets up and walks off. Yeah. And then Suta. So, because the point is that Suta speaking the whole thing anyway. Mm-hmm. Even what when we say Suka Uvacha, we know it's Suta Goswami is explaining it.
Yeah.
But he's explaining what has been said. Then it goes back to him.
Yeah.
But then we even have places where Vyasa is speaking. Mm-hmm. Because we know it opens with Vyasa. Mm-hmm. You know. And so then the whole thing is, it's all, it's overlapping. I think one time Kunti had, you know, drive himself nuts working out all these layers of what's there, and that net charts and everything.
Yeah.
So it's a very detailed
dialogue within a dialogue.
Yes, within like that. So you're worried about commentaries. So this is the same in dialogue. Okay, summary of text 62. Okay. As was done by Sukadeva Goswami in the 2nd canto, Suta Goswami first lists the 10 characteristics of the Bhagavatam, then defines them. According to Sri Baladeva Vidyabhushana, in this verse the characteristics of Sarga are described in order. Now the topics of creation and so on are defined. Okay. From the agitation of the original modes within the unmanifest material nature, the Mahatattva arises. Right? So, in other words, the modes of nature are in Pradhan, but they're just homogeneously there. So when they become agitated, like as it said before, that the Lord agitated them, right, in the creation. So when he glances, they become agitated. But then that creates everything to be separated, because all these things to control comes under the modes, because everything works by the modes there. Right? Yes.
So only the modes get agitated, or everything becomes agitated? I tried to
figure it out. Just together. So, is it only the mom gets agitated, or everybody gets agitated?
No, I know who's getting agitated first. That's the mom.
Yes, but then what's the result of the mom getting agitated? Is there anybody going to... Yes, so that's the whole point. When the modes are agitated, then everybody else gets...
So they get the first.
Everybody gets the benefit. Right? Isn't it? Yes, as they say. In other words, that original agitation is shared in a just way. Does that make sense? Yeah, because the point is the modes are what controls everything. So once they get, then it all happens. Or let's say, not even looking at it here, agitated just means put into motion, because before that, padan means there's nothing working. Now let's say everybody's sitting around, it's just an ordinary day, then the mom decides, oh, hey, let's do this. You know, let's make this arrangement, or the discussion comes up, and hey, isn't this one's birthday next week? And it's, yeah, and then what happens? Then everything starts to work. You know, this one has to do this, that one that, this and this are made, right? Yeah, so that's what's happening. From the Mahatattva comes the element of false ego, which divides into 3 aspects.
And from this threefold ego come the subtle sense objects. So the three aspects is then is what's connected with the body, what's connected with the mind, and what's connected with the senses. Right? The fourth one, because it's outside of pradhan, that's the purusha bhav. Right? But that's the fourth. That's the consciousness. So there's four kinds of false ego. But only when that first one is there, then the other three will be manifested. Because if you have the idea I'm the controller and enjoyer, you're not dealing with spiritual energy anymore. Now you're dealing with material energy. So as soon as you're dealing with material energy, yes?
This proton is called chitta?
Chitta can be, yes, polluted consciousness or like that. But it also has other names. It's the basis of the whole thing.
The causal body.
Because that's what causes everything else. You know, because so this concept of body is different than just general, it means that we have a particular form. That's one thing. But what causes that you have all those is because of this, because you want to control and enjoy.
So the reason why the Maya bodies, they cannot get liberation is
because of this fourth one. They may get rid of the other three, but then they haven't gotten rid of the fourth. So when the desire comes up to do activity, they don't know activity in pure devotion, so they can't go into the spiritual world. So they'll go back to the material world. Like that. That's the difference. So that's the subtlety of these things. Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
Original sin?
Yes, it's the original sin.
Yeah.
There was something where, I can't remember, just reading it on the purports or something, Prabhupada was talking about the material and the spiritual situations. You know, and bring out the element that it's not, it's a perspective, it's not a location. Mm. I think it was in one of the purports in the Bhagavatam chapter in the morning. I remember he just mentioned it as he's going through, but it had that. You can understand. It's just as soon as you, in other words, as soon as you look upon the Lord's energy, even though it may be the spiritual world, as something to enjoy, you're no longer in the spiritual world. You're in the material world. Not necessarily that now you have a material body. You're still functioning a body made out of Satchitananda, but your consciousness, you're in the material world. And so, therefore, that's the reason that it has to be happening within Gokul, not Golok. Because Golok, you won't have that. It just doesn't happen.
Right?
Prema.
Because you're in Prema.
Yeah, you're in Prema. So it's not going to happen. There is no such thing as that. But Tatastha means you're neutral. So both these things can be seen at once. Yes.
Prabhupada, Dham is a state of consciousness.
Dham is a state of consciousness, yes. Yes, because if you have that, then you can appreciate it. Yeah, also then wherever Prabhupada goes, then it's Vrindavan. Okay.
Tathasta in prema, when we're in prema, as I mentioned, that it will never happen in the spiritual world, in Goloka. It might happen only in Gokul.
The Tathasta position.
Yeah, but it still will be there as Tathasta.
That's why the example is given iron and fire. We're the iron, and the fire is the eternal potency. So if you're there, then you know it'll be there eternally. So it's not
just by the focus.
Yeah, because you've taken shelter. Point is we're small. We have to take shelter of either the internal or external. We're too small to function on our own. Right? So you take shelter of one or the other. So the point is once you've taken shelter of the external, you're not going to do that again. You know what I'm saying? Just like, you know...
For sure.
That's what Krishna says. Once going there, one never returns. It means, mathematically, you could say, yes, it could happen, but it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? That's just the way it is. Because it said that... It means the only thing that can destroy devotional service is offense to the devotees. So... In the spiritual world, then Krishna steps in before that can happen. You know, but because the Jayan Vijay desired to serve the Lord in that way, he stepped in just a moment late, just so that the curse was there.
because it was their desire to serve in that way. He could have showed up earlier than that and stopped it. Right? So it just doesn't happen. So therefore, nobody comes back here.
Let me think of Ula as two kind of souls, those who are like just manifesting, and those who are coming out of material.
No. No one's coming out of material nature. The tatasta is, tatasta energy is its own energy. So the jivas are expanding from the tatasta shakti. The tatasta shakti is expanding from the internal potency.
Yeah, this is one kind of soul. And
no, that's all souls. It means all the jivas. Right? It's not all the living entities, because internal potency is also living entities, but they're not tatasta shakti. So they're not jivas.
Yeah, I mean, you said from there, from Gokul, some jivas who choose the material facilities or are in the material world.
It's just like here. You're in the Dham. You're in the spiritual world. What are you seeing? Right? That's because that's what we want to see. If we want to see the internal potency, then that's what we'd see. Like Pankajani Prabhu said, it's a state of consciousness, the Dham. And so you'll see, because Prauda Maya is Prauda Maya is, you have the Yoga Maya and Maha Maya are the same person, just two different offices. So how, and she is Chit Shakti, which is then Surup Shakti. But sometimes it appears that when they, depends on what they're doing, but Chit Shakti generally, when we're talking about the complete potency, the, you know, basically undivided potency of the Lord, Sarupa is generally, from what I can see, is used in relationship to the pastimes. Chit is used in relationship to Tattva. Like that. So generally we talk about Yoga Maya as then she's referred to as Chit Shakti. But that doesn't mean Chit Shakti meaning of Sat Chit Ananda, of the internal potency. This means Chit meaning conscious of the whole thing. Right? So then she is there, so she, it means all these energies are hers. But this is from the aspect of controlling them. Does that make sense? Like that. So then if the jiva looks at this, whatever is manifest, it doesn't matter whether it's internal or external, is that if they look at it and the idea is to enjoy it, right, however subtle it is, then she deals as Mahamaya. And if you see it as, you know, to engage in the Lord's service, then she deals as Yogamaya. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the policeman standing there on the corner, you know, and the kid comes up and asks where this place is. He deals very nicely, and then at the same time as he sees somebody, you know, about to steal someone's purse, and he goes over and deals very roughly. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same person. It's just depending on how you act is how they deal. Does that make sense? So that's all that's happening. So we were the purse wallets. Does that make sense? So then, you know, it works like that. Does that make sense? So the important thing is to understand the state of consciousness that you're working with. It's not about location. Generally, devotees try to discuss it in connection with location and get all bent out of shape about that. But you know, you're talking about, you know, the whole tattva. There is no time and space. Brahma Sanghita says that very clearly.
I understand that. I was like making about the.
But there's not two kinds of souls. There's souls. Just some souls, you know, make the right choice, and some need a little longer to make the right choice.
Yes.
They need some encouragement.
The same type of jiva, but some of them is already.
Yes. That's why it works nicely to say some rather than there's two kinds of jivas. So otherwise, you almost sound like a mudra who would say there's three kinds of jivas.
The same
there's only one kind of jiva. Right? Now, there are those who have, you know, taken, they naturally take up their constitutional position, and then those who, you know, want to take the tour before doing that.
One who already took the tour.
Yeah, but those are the same ones. It's just which direction you're going. Right? You ever been to Krishnagar? There's a train going to Calcutta. Okay? Now,
express.
Yeah, some are going that way, some are coming this way. Same people, same factory, same political party, right? You understand? So it's not, that's why it mentions that when the Dasamul deals with the Jiva Tattva, first they describe the natural position of just Jiva. Then they explain the conditioned souls and the liberated souls. But it first describes Jiva as general. Because otherwise, if it did the other way, then we would try to categorize. But the point is we only make the distinction because we're here and we're not supposed to be. Once you're there, you don't make a distinction. It's just like, does that make sense? Yeah, that's all. Okay. From the Mahatattva comes the element false ego, which divides into three aspects. And from this threefold ego come the subtle sense objects, the senses and gross sense objects. Right? So again here, because of these three aspects, you'll also get this adhyatmic, adhibhautic, adhidaivic. It's actually a major aspect within the whole. The generation of all these is called creation, sarga. Because then everything comes into that, the subtle sense object, the senses, and the gross sense objects. So the five, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and then you have the senses, right? Then sight, sound, and all that, you understand? So you're going to get all those things. So that way you end up with the 24. Just the senses take up 20.
Is that the primary?
That's all the primary. The primary, all this is going on. Then the secondary is where all this will be manifest, so that people have, you know, all what you can see. So that's the what we call is the adibhautik. Right?
Okay. And when other religions, they speak about creation.
Yes.
They speak about secondary.
They're generally only talking about secondary, though there is something is that. Some concept of it, but it's more inferred. I think it's not really. But they only talk about just what you see. They don't.
Yes.
All it is that God wanted it and it happened and it was you know, good and that was it. And then you know it was a lot of work, so they had to take a nap. But they don't catch us. As Mahavishnu, he's always taking a nap. And that's all he's doing. Go ahead, try it out. It'll be a lot less problem. Right? You know? You know? Okay. The Mahatattva arises from the agitation of the original state of the material nature, Pradhan, which consists of the unmanifested modes. From the Mahatattva comes false ego in each of the three modes, from which arise the subtle sense objects, Bhuta Matra. The senses, indriya, and the gross sense elements, artanam. Right? Because you're always getting that. The mind will be the goodness, right? The senses, the intelligence will be the passion, the gross material body, and the identity with that. That false ego, that's the ignorance. Right? So you're always going to get these elements. As well as the demigods were implied without being mentioned. In other words, sarga is the sending forth of the causal elements, karana srishti. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan cites a corresponding verse from Shruti. Sattviki rajasash chaiva tamashas cha trida mahan. Mahatattva has three types, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Vishnu Purana 1.2.34. Because it mentions that it creates the three kinds of each. You have the modes, and so therefore it creates the false ego, which is in each of the modes. Therefore, the Mahatattva has sattva, rajas, and tamas. Impelled by the desires of the living entities, and given kind help by the Purusha, these elements combine, making moving and non-moving life forms appear like seeds producing more seeds. This is called Visarga. Right, so here's the point is that that's come up, so false ego is there. And that false ego we see is that the drive of all this has to come from I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's the origin of the whole thing. Right? Otherwise, why would there be a need for this primary creation? Right? You know, in other words, Pradhan is quite happy the way it is. Right? And so, but then, because the living entity has desire, right, that uti, right?
Yes.
Then they're given help by the Purusha. The elements combine and produce all the how you say, moving and non-moving life forms. And then all the situations that go with those. Right? Just like if you make the life form of a fish, then you have to have water. Mm-hmm. You know, for them to be in and that whole thing. And then you have to have a bigger fish that, you know, eats them. You know, so you have to have all that, you know, otherwise what's the meaning of being a fish? Right? Here the Purusha is the super soul, footnote 30. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments that this refers to the Paramatma situated within Brahma. Okay, so that is given help by the Purusha. Visarga is the name of the conglomeration of, quote, these elements, the Mahatattva and so on. A conglomeration directly brought about by the residual desires carried over by the jivas from previous karma. Vasana mayaha. Right, so that means there's always been a material world. Somebody may be new, so they're coming in as Brahma. Right? But the point is that the reason that Brahma will have that job to create is because it's full of living entities who were already here. And now they're just coming out again in the breath. Right?
So the new guy starts at the top.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yes. This secondary creation is the coming forth of moving and non-moving forms of life, flowing in a perpetual current, thus appearing in cycles the way one seed comes forth from another. Right? Because we say a seed comes forth from another seed. What does that mean? The seed comes forth, sprouts, makes a tree. It bears fruits and flowers, then from that you get the seeds, and that starts again. So it means the whole thing. So just by saying seed to seed, then you've mentioned the whole thing. So that seed to seed, I guess that's the original that was there before, dust to dust. Right? That is to say, sarga is vyasti, the sending forth of the individual beings. By implication, this description also includes the topic creative urges, uti. Right? Because otherwise, why would it be that way? Right? You know, why would you make an aardvark unless someone wanted to be one? Right? You know? 6.2.3. Okay.
Flying squirrel.
Huh? Yes, a flying squirrel. Yeah, because last time it was just a regular squirrel. Yeah. Okay. My time's up. Okay. So he's going through these, so we clearly know what are the topics and what exactly they're being, what's being defined there. Then we see as they come up how. You know, there may be a prominence here and there, but they're everywhere. And how one thing infers the other. Mm. Right.
Yes? Sarga is caused by Ahamka?
The Sarga is Krishna's creation. So it's him glancing at the material energy, you know, agitating the modes, and then that creates the false egos and all that, because along with that goes false ego. But there it's the false ego and the controller and the enjoyer. So that goes in. So then all those four
four are there combined. So the pradhan has three. I mean, the material energy has three, and then the jiva comes with his own. You know, therefore he's superior. I got my own. Yes.
When we say the living entity first comes in as Brahma, where is he coming from? The glance, or
he's decided that he's going to take a more external view to the Lord's pastime. So then from there, then he ends up. So it means, because the spiritual world, you have to be in the spiritual world, but that spiritual world, to have the tatastha, has to be the manifestation of the spiritual world within the material. Because then both are there. You can look at it either way. Because in Goloka, you can only look at it in one way. Right? And in the material world, you only look at it in that way. So there has to be something that's both, and that's Gokul. That's the place where you have both. So the spiritual material is held together by the tatastha shakti. Right? So then whenever we make our appearance, then, you know, we somehow made the wrong choice, so then we end up coming, you know, how do you say, when the show moves on, we don't. You know, we get left behind. Yes, when the show moves, you leave all the trash, you know, so you kind of left in the, you know, the black plastic bags and stuff.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai.
Jai Nitai Govardhana ki
jai.